You're listening to Making Good. I'm Renee Blanchard, founder and operator of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery, located here in New Orleans, Louisiana. Church Alley is a people-first, mission-driven small business that I opened in 2013. And the best part about owning a cafe is the people. So in this podcast, I interview the makers, the farmers, and the many interesting people I've met through the shops. The folks doing the good work here in Louisiana and all along the Gulf Coast. Let's get started.
I'm Tippi Tippins, Chief Eternal Optimist at Goods That Matter. We're an eco home goods company, and all of our products donate to a specific partner cause. We have donated $48,000 so far, and we donate 10% of our profits to each partner group. So yeah, it's a mix of home good products. And so we have everything from soaps to candles to linens. And we're also just about to launch a group of products that eliminate plastic. So like daily use home goods products that replace plastic. So like beeswax, food wraps, that will donate to World Central Kitchen, and also some things that we don't make but purchase from other ethical companies, like wool dryer balls and sustainable straws, and what else? Like travel utensils and things like that. So eliminating plastic is a big passion of mine and something that we're starting to really focus on this year. Yeah. We meant to do it last year and, yeah. You know.
Yeah, the supply chain got really crazy for everyone.
Yeah, and it still is. It still is. The jars for my candles are unavailable right now, so that's a total nightmare. So we're in the midst of trying to figure that out.
Yeah, we're also launching some new products soon, and which would be in glass bottles. And so I'm trying to figure out what to do. Change up the kind of bottle or reuse ones we already have and just, put a label over it because we've already printed glass bottles. So,
yeah.
No, it's crazy.
It really is.
Well, thank you for joining our little podcast. So, making good. So I already told you this. I invited you as my first guest because I was really nervous about starting the podcast. So I was like, oh, I already know her.
Fun.
Yeah, I could talk to her. And I probably know what she's going to say. It's pretty good. I really love your mission statement, which is, I think that this is the right one, is Goods That Matter creates everyday design goods with extraordinary impact. Mm-hmm. I love that. And I know I have a lot of your products, and we include, and we have a lot of products in the shop. And then we also included your candles in our, when we celebrate our 8th anniversary of business in January.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've been coming to the shop for a while as well.
Yeah. And the shop was part of your shop for 3 years?
Yeah, I think.
2 at the first location and then a year at the second?
Yeah, yeah. So the Good Shop, we want to talk a little bit the Good Shop is a collaborative store with businesses that are very similar to yours.
Yes, yeah. So in the present location, there's 6 partner businesses. And then we also sell products of local makers and designers that have similar missions on consignment. So since in this new location, we have so much more space, we're able to do that. Whereas, we just didn't have the room for that before. Yeah. So in all of our other locations, it was 3 shop partners. Just because we did, we sublet a space from you in both locations and then sublet a space from a jewelry maker uptown before we had this location. But yeah, since we have so much room in this spot, we are able to have 6 different partners and then also sell other people's goods. And then the way we handle it is that we share the overhead costs and then we all have a shop day. So it makes it a really manageable way to have a brick and mortar space as a small business. You know, it really keeps your overhead costs down.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And just the time spent working the counter.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're all just there one day a week, you know, so it really is really manageable in that way, too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so important to me. It still is that the products in the shop just like come from small businesses and are just like, I was thinking about like, what are we doing? It's like added moments of pleasure in our lives. You know, like all of the products we have are just like little things that give us pleasure during the day.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about Church Alley, is that we are a place that people stop in a routine, you know, every day. And it's like a moment of no stress or of not thinking of something, of like getting this delicious cup of coffee or the avocado toast that they love. And your products are the same, you know, there's these little things that are just so well crafted and like smell really good or something like that, you know? And so it was fun to have, it made a lot of sense for y'all to have a space in Church Alley for the time that y'all did.
Yeah. They definitely, you know, share a similar, I love those little touch points, you know, like thinking about things being a little touch point in people's day. And I mean, we all interact with all of these objects every day. And so it's kind of fun to think about designing them that way, you know, like being a part of people's lives and then also, you know, using really nice materials that are healthy both for us and for the environment. And I enjoy designing those types of things, you know, just like the underdogs.
Yeah. How did you start Goods That Matter? How did it come to be?
I started after the BP oil spill. That was, was inspired to create something that would raise funding for cleanup. Cause all of my experience has been, creative. So I was a product designer and furniture designer and, had like 15 years of experience doing that before doing this. And when the BP oil spill happened, just as a longtime environmentalist, it was just something that I couldn't let go. You know, it was so disturbing and it drug out for so long that, I just kept on thinking about it every day and figuring out a way that I could do something, because I wasn't a vet. I wasn't a scientist, you know, there was no way I could get in there and, you know, directly help. And so, yeah, then I just came up with this idea for the soaps. So the black bird shaped soaps have a smaller ceramic bird at the center. So as you wash your hands, you eventually get from that ceramic to the, from the soap to the ceramic. I know you know about them already, but for the people listening to the podcast, and so, yeah, it's symbolic of going from oil to clean. And then we donate to Healthy Gulf and International Bird Rescue. And so International Bird Rescue travels the world and responds to oil spills, you know, everywhere. So they came here when the BP spill happened. And then Healthy Gulf really works a lot in legislation. So they're, working on all of those environmental protection laws and, you know, lobbying to they do all kinds of different projects, right. So there are two donation partners for the soaps. And, when I started, we just did the soaps for the first 2 years. And, when I first started, I made the ceramics as well. So it was, making all of those ceramics and filling all the orders and, you know, just doing all of those things. And I got my start on Kickstarter that raised the funds for the first, you know, multiple batches of soaps. And And in starting that, then I was inspired to start the company. And the basis for the company is that every product is made of eco-friendly materials, and every product is made in the US and raises money for a different cause. So it was just wanting to take that first product idea and then expand it to other causes, because there's so many, that need attention. And so was inspired to start the company from that. And my business is completely bootstrapped. So, I had that bit of crowdfunding in the beginning, and I had a little bit of savings as well to help me pay my rent and stuff when I first started, because I've always done this full time. I just sort of took a big leap of faith, and it wasn't that I didn't look for jobs. I did look for jobs, but I just never got one.
Right.
And so I was like, okay.
They were just telling you had to do this.
Yeah. So I just kept on working on stuff, and I would occasionally look for another job. And then I was like, okay, well, I've got so much to do on this. I'm just going to keep on doing it. And I've just sort of been plugging away ever since. And there were certainly, ups and downs and some difficult years where I definitely wish I had a job, but I still could never get one. I was like overqualified.
Keep trying. Yeah.
Nobody would hire me. I was just like, God damn it. I just want to buy some food.
How did you know how to make the ceramics?
Well, as a industrial designer, I just am used to just always having to figure out a new way of making things. So, because every product is always different. Mm-hmm. And so I do have a lot of experience and knowledge on different materials and processes. And I asked for help in how to make the molds. And I couldn't find anyone here in the beginning to help me make slip cast molds. They could only help me make press molds, which is putting clay on, you basically divide the shape in half and then press clay in one side, press clay in the other, score it, and then stick it together. But it's so much more work than the slip casting. With the slip casting, you make the mold and then you pour in the clay and then you let it dry. So then it becomes solid again. And it's just a lot less cleanup and a much faster process. So I ended up reaching out to my friend Monty, who I used to work for Kohler designing faucets. Mm-hmm. And he is a master slip maker or slip cast maker and mold maker in general. And so I reached out to him. And when I went up to the Chicago Craft Renegade Craft Fair, I just went a little bit further afterwards and visited friends in Wisconsin, and he helped me make the first mother mold. And then I still use that mold to make other molds from.
Oh, wow.
That's
cool. I remember when we you came with me to look at the location that Church Alley is in right now. And we went upstairs to the apartment, and they had one of your shower heads that you had made. You had designed.
Totally.
Didn't that just happen?
Yeah. Apartment hunting too, the same thing. I was like, I designed this faucet.
Give me this house.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah, that is really funny. How long did you work for Cole?
For 4 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they're based in Wisconsin. And it's a great job and a great company. I just got really tired of living in a small town in the middle of nowhere in Wisconsin.
Cool.
And the winters were really rough.
We were talking about how the supply chain right now with products is really difficult. I know a lot of small food makers are having a hard time buying as well, or like different
things,
and tops and different things like that. And so many, we've all had to make some changes in the last year too, and how we work. How did Good Set Matter evolve in the last year, or was your model kind of okay to ride? Because you do online sales. You've always done online sales too.
Yeah, I mean, online definitely picked up last year. When the pandemic first started, we started making hand sanitizer. And when it was so difficult to find, you know, nobody could find that, or toilet paper. And so I asked the soap maker that I work with if she had a recipe for it, if she thought we could make it. And she did. And so that actually kept both of our businesses afloat. She started making it for herself and then making it for Goods That Matter also. I mean, it was really difficult to find the materials. You know, we had to find the isopropyl alcohol and those spray bottles.
Yeah.
And both were incredibly difficult to find. So I was finding some stuff on eBay. And then we actually bought like a big, you know, 50 gallon drum of the isopropyl, and because you could find it sometimes if you bought it in those massive quantities.
Mm-hmm.
So when the pandemic first started, that definitely helped keep both of our businesses afloat. I had some savings, but it just helped keep money coming in.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the shop closed in March, mid-March, and then we were doing curbside pickups from the shop, and we created a website for the shop with all of our products on there. So we definitely, you know, we had to figure that out. And so I actually moved my shipping from my studio to the store so that I could just be there for curbside pickups and shipping stuff at the same time.
Yeah.
And then now, now, like I mentioned, the candle jars are unavailable until late May, possibly early June, because there's only one factory in the world that creates these recycled glass jars.
Oh.
And they had a COVID breakout, and so they were closed for a month.
Oh, wow.
And so it's just delayed.
Yeah. So the glass that the candles are in are all recycled. It's like made broken glass from other pieces, or when is it recycled from?
They recycle it and they
turn it into new stuff.
Re-pour it. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're definitely cast glass. It's not like blown glass.
Okay.
So yeah, they, I'm guessing, melt down all of that old glass and then turn it into new glass.
Wow.
Or not new glass, but.
Yeah, sure. Reimagined glass.
Yeah. Repurposed. They're based in Spain. It's a Spanish company. Yeah, and we're just about to start selling the candles for Whole Foods. So it's really bad timing because we're supposed to start now and I can't get the jars now. And then I found an alternate jar, and we were going through the approval process, and then now those jars are also sold out.
Oh,
so I have one other jar. I bought a couple hundred of these smaller jars. So now I'm gonna, hopefully they'll go for that. And if not, I guess my backup plan is I'm gonna try and, I guess, collect like wine bottles and then just cut them off and use them, because it's roughly the same diameter as my jars.
Yeah, it does look like them. It does look like
Yeah. Them. So it
sure
would,
the wine shops in town would give you those bottles.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll buy them even. yeah. So I guess that's my backup plan for now, is to do that.
Yeah. How do you come up with new products? Like,
most of the time, yeah, it's mostly topical, you know, things happening in the world and trying to figure out a way to do something to help. Like the candles started when that flooding happened in Baton Rouge and Lafayette.
Yeah.
And product development typically takes, you know, at least a couple of months, you know, on the fastest side of things. And so the candles came about and wanting to be able to respond quickly to help raise funds after that flooding happened. So that's when I started those rebuild candles. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, it just takes a week or so to make candles and get them labeled and have them turned around. And so, yeah, that was the inspiration for that. And so then now there, I think we have 12 scents now. And so each scent gives to a different cause.
Do you have new scents or do you change the scent to a new, like if an emergency happens?
All of the disaster relief candles are those rebuild. And they're all jasmine.
Oh, okay.
So we just keep all of those scents the same. And then if there's a new cause, then they get a new scent.
Okay, okay.
Like we started the action candle that has the vetiver that gives to racial equity. We started that last year. So that's a new scent. And then we also started Breathe. That's a lavender scent that gives to mental health.
Oh, cool.
So a lot of those things are just, you know, as things are happening in the world, they're a response to, things, you know, things in the news or things locally. And then sometimes there's like our solid perfumes, they give to pollinators. So that was just in response to something that has been a long, you know, an ongoing issue.
For bees, right?
Yeah, for bees. And something that I've always, you know, been passionate about, but and was curious about. So I read this book, I think it was called The Beekeeper's Lament, and just learning more about bees, they're driven by scent. So that's what causes them to be pollinators as they're going from each flower, you know, attracted by the scent. Mm-hmm. And so then I had the idea that it should be a perfume.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Then you're mimicking the bee as you're, you know, smelling your perfume.
Aww. I heard a story that bees do dance. They go when they're finding a new place, like the hunter bees that go, the little real estate agent bees, like go and find places, and then they have dance offs to decide.
Yeah.
Which one of their house is the better one?
I know, they're really cool. They're really fascinating.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, they have like different dance patterns, and yeah, it's super cool.
And whoever then the hive decides like which one they like better, which dance they like better, and that's where they move to next, or something like that.
Uh huh. Yeah, it's like a way to show them where the new house is.
Yeah, directions or like.
Uh-huh. Yeah, totally. I wonder if New Orleans bees twerk.
They're distinct styles. Like each person has such a different personality or different music. What, so you said that you're working on, what's your next product that you're coming?
The beeswax food wraps. And those will launch in just a couple weeks for around Earth Day.
Oh, cool.
As well as all of those new products that are like the dryer balls and all of those things. Yeah, the beeswax wraps, it's a tongue twister. I actually found that production partner through you because you started selling their wraps.
Yeah.
And I'd been wanting to make them for years and just had never found somebody to partner with. And yeah, I'm so excited. They just sent me samples yesterday and they turned out great. And they have their own apiary there. So yeah, they're beekeepers and they make these wraps and other bee products.
Yeah, their mom and daughter. The husband came and brought me some more because we also sell the lip balm.
Oh, cool.
They had a peppermint. They had run out of the peppermint flavor oil or something.
Uh-huh.
So he had driven from Baton Rouge to come and like drop them all off. Yeah. And
nice.
It's so cool. I don't even know.
Yeah.
I think when we started doing We knew we were going to expand the grocery section. Emily, one of my staff members, went and just spent a couple days looking at all the other small businesses around the state. Yeah, so we have this big list now. And as we add shelving, we're just like going down and calling different people.
That's awesome.
Yeah, some other businesses to come in. And that's just like, you know, that is really important to me. Like, I definitely want, I feel like the last year gave us all an opportunity to like reach, to like work together, you know, to like bundle all of our products, and like our customers can then buy from other businesses. And that's kind of how the grocery expanded too. But then, but you had, you know, the Good Shop had been doing that, and y'all had been in the shop before. And I didn't realize that Good Shop had so many partners now that y'all had.
Yeah, it's like almost, I think it's right around 30 businesses total.
Wow.
And someone asked yesterday when I was in the store how many were female owned. And I think female owned is like 26 of those businesses.
Yeah.
And then people of color plus female is like 28 businesses. So, or 29. So there's, or no, I think there's two that are male owned.
Yeah.
And then I don't have a breakdown of like how many women of color, but it's, and the two male owned are people of color. So yeah.
New Orleans is 60% of small businesses are women owned.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it's really interesting, like how
it is.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm always curious if it's such a high percentage in other cities, because I feel like here, everyone that I work with and talk to is a female-owned business. It's rare that it's male-owned.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
Before that, I mean, the business name has changed along the way. I mean, when I first started, it was just the soaps. So it was like Bird Project Soaps.
Oh, okay.
And then it was Matter Design for Social Change was the business name.
Mm-hmm.
And then that sounded more like a consultancy. So when I became a benefit corporation, then it was Matter Inc., a benefit corporation.
Mm.
And so, yeah, it became Goods That Matter after doing that accelerator, because just to better describe what we do.
Yeah, I mean, it's perfect. It makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Well, I think it's also an interesting conversation, because you see this in coffee and chocolate, is like, are these labeling things like the fair trade or rainforest safe or sea safe or something like that, like what is that really, how good are those labeling, you know, and why are some people getting it and some people not?
And,
you know, and one thing that we say, you know, well, one thing is it's money. You have to have enough money as a business
right
to do that whole process, get the labels, keep the labels, pay for them every year or however many years. And with coffee, like, we don't sell fair trade coffee, but we work with small roasters who are working directly with farmers.
Right.
And that's just a more economical, right? Because those farmers can't afford those.
Right. Yeah. Those certification stamps are just too expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's always an interesting conversation in the shop that we have with people. And my thought is that it's not, those labeling aren't always the best, because you can see with dairies or with eggs that just because something is cage free doesn't necessarily mean that it's as humane as you would want.
You know, right. Something like right. That. Yeah, I know. We've started buying really expensive eggs just because, I don't know, when you think about it, you're like, okay, even if this costs $8 for this 12 eggs, it's still less than a dollar an egg.
Yeah.
And It's crazy that some of them only sell for $2.
That's true.
Those chickens aren't being treated well.
If
those eggs are less than 10 cents a piece, like,
what does that mean?
Yeah, completely. And so, yeah, it's like I used to buy the ones that just said cage free, but now I buy the more expensive ones that are like, you know, roaming on a farm and eating all the good stuff.
Sister to Gable. And
yeah, they get massages and stories told to them at night.
Some good sleep every night.
They all have a pet pug.
You just got a pug.
Yeah. Let's see. She's asleep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, cute. Oh, hello.
Cha-Cha.
Is that her name, Cha-Cha?
Yeah. Bo thought it up. When she gets riled up, she's very acrobatic and a little dancer. So it's fitting for her.
Moving fast.
She's got some spirit.
Awesome.
Yeah, she's adapting well.
Aww. And you got her here in New Orleans?
No, I actually adopted her from a woman in D'Iberville outside of Biloxi.
Oh, okay.
She was older, she was 80, and she started to have some health problems. And this little lady's 10 months old, so she's still a puppy. And she was just kind of too much for her. She has another dog. Is a Pekingese, looked like that creature from Neverending Story.
Oh, yeah.
She just laid there the whole time. She didn't get up. She didn't do anything for hours. She just sat there and didn't move. But yeah, so this lady's a little bit too wild. And so she needed to find her a new home.
Thank you so much for talking to me. I appreciate
it.
Thanks for helping me launch this podcast.
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah, I was thinking the last time we did one of the Bossy Like Me articles, and I was thinking that in that time, I remember it was a pretty tough time for the business. And so I remember the theme for my article was like, just keep going.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So
that's true. Like there, you know, business ebbs and flows. You know, I was talking, I think to Bernie's making our new website. And so we were talking just about how, if we had known the feelings, like how hard, and I feel like the word hard or difficult doesn't even explain what the roller coaster feels like. I would never have started the business. So much you don't know. Which is great because you wouldn't do
it. Totally.
And it's just, you know, you have to remember your purpose. Like I think that's what I always say to people when they're ask me about opening a business. I say, you just have to find one thing that matters to you more than sleep, more than going out to the bar that night, more than vacations, more than anything else, and remember it.
You know, mm-hmm.
The whole time. For me, I literally love serving people.
Mm-hmm.
I love handing something delicious and good to a person. Like I loved waiting tables. I love working at the counter. That is what I really, really love. And I love to do that as much
mm-hmm.
as
possible.
What do you think now that you've gone through so many years is like, what's kept you in business?
I think, the thing that keeps me going is the environment. It's the thing that I'm most passionate about, is just trying to help the environment. And
I mean, that you have.
Yeah, exactly. And being an industrial designer, you know, is often an antithesis to being an environmentalist. You know, I mean, most industrial design jobs are designing electronics or things made of plastic or you know, Kohler was unique because it was designing products that had a long life and that are made of materials that aren't terrible for the environment, you know, like stone and ceramic and metal are pretty natural materials, but most materials in industrial design are not. So yeah, it's being an environmentalist and, you know, trying to find more ways to help and more ways to make things better and protect the environment and change, you know, change the way that we live, you know, like all of these things like are, like plastic is left over from the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, you know, as a byproduct. Right. And so, you know, they were trying to figure out how to use it. And so then now we have plastic everything.
Wow.
You know? And so, you know, it's a byproduct of the petroleum industry. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, it's just like rethinking all of these things that we do every day, but we could do them a better way. Yeah. You know, we can't, it is possible to change these things that are so deeply entrenched from the 1920s and the 1960s and 70s. Yeah, I guess it's just a passion and wanting to be a part of that change.
Mm-hmm. And all of your products, like their in life is something else, right? Like all of your products, like this bird soap, you have a little keepsake of the bird mm-hmm. in the ceramic that you can put somewhere or gift. Mm-hmm. And your candles like are you know, glass, you could put another candle in it or you could use it as a vase or yes. something like that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I definitely think about the end life of the product for sure. And that was one reason I chose those jars is because that they are nice jars to use, right. You know, like
they're dirty. They mm-hmm. hold, you know, they're a big size. So they're like,
yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like you can use it as a drinking glass, you can use it to hold your pens, you know, and it's attractive. It's not like, you know, some ugly jar in the end.
I use jars for my vases at the house all the time. I only have like I have two nice vases and then I buy nice jars of whatever, pasta sauce or something like that, that I love because I'm gonna use it for a vase later.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I have a couple of old like vintage ball, you know, glass jars that I use for vases. Yeah, I mean some of them are really beautiful for sure.
Yeah. Well, totally. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you, Renee.
Yeah, on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah. I
know. First humid day we've had.
So hot.
You know.
So hot.
Yeah. All right. Well, I got my vaccine, my second vaccine yesterday.
Oh yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. So,
that's so exciting.
Yeah. And the bars are going to open later. announced.
Yeah.
All announced today. So we should go get some wine or.
Yeah. I'd love to. Somewhere. That would be awesome. Yeah. I'm fully vaccinated now. So I am good. I'm ready whenever, 2 weeks from now.
Yeah. Sounds good. All right. Thank you so much, Shippy. Have a really good night.
Okay, you too. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's all for today. Thanks so much for listening to Making Good. You can find our podcast on all the platforms you find your favorite podcasts. You can also find a transcript of this episode and all of our episodes on our website, churchalley.store. If you loved this episode, please share it and let others know about the good work of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery. Thanks again for listening to Making Good. I hope you have a really good day. We'll see you next time.